going to start with the set-aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, thank you for your grace and mercy on me. Help me to glorify you today by carrying your message. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, this is part three on the spiritual experience or spiritual awakening. It's the result of the steps. It's what we are seeking to have in our lives. We want to be awakened. We want to be aware. We want to experience the spirit. It's really a God awakening and experiencing God and allowing God to work in our lives. And they mention on page 25, and I covered this a little bit on the last part too, it says, and there is a solution, the great fact, this is the great fact, is that they have had deep and effective spiritual experiences, asterisk, fully explained, appendix 2. Now, in the original book, there was no, 1939, there was no star. And what was the what was the result of the spiritual experience that they had had? It had revolutionized their whole attitude towards life. And I think it's a revolution, which means an upheaval. And so I had to revolutionize my attitude towards life, that I was not here to serve Michael, but to serve God. I was here to be of service to my fellow man. What I wanted mattered. Does it matter? It's what God wants for me that matters. My role is to stay close to him and do his work well. That's a whole revolutionary way of seeing things. And towards life, our fellows, and towards God's universe. And then it's followed by the central fact of their lives, and it's the central fact of my life today, is the absolute certainty, that's certainty, but absolute certainty, that my Creator, God, has entered into my heart and life in a way which is indeed miraculous. And you know, there's a line in the big book, it says on page 100, when we look back, the things that happened when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have imagined, and isn't that so true for me today? Looking back, how did I get to be where I am today? And it's not because I'm rich or famous or anything like that, but I have peace. I think I'm trying to love and tolerate as a practice of living. I have peace at most of the time and serenity. And I know that if I don't have peace and serenity, then it's because of me. It's not anybody else's fault. And it says, he has accomplished, commenced to accomplish those things for which we could not do before myself. And I did not have a power to live, so he's provided a power to live. He's provided a power that helped me see the truth about alcohol. He has accomplished the ability for me to see when I'm in resentment or in fear that I'm seeing things wrong. He can change the way I see things so that I can deal with them in a positive manner. He's changed the way I react to situations when I'm with him. When I'm connected to God, I react differently than when I'm in self-will. And I might add, obviously, it's better. And that goes back to page 85, how we react if we're in fit spiritual condition. And then it really says we have a maintenance of our daily reprieve from alcohol based upon our spiritual condition, how fit it is. And so I thought we'd go look at Appendix 2 in the back and look through that. And it's on page 567. And they're going to put why they're going to tell us why they did this. And it says the terms because they changed the steps too. And it said in the original 12 step, having had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps, they changed it to spiritual awakening. Now, they're going to tell you why they did that. It says the term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading, and that's what I'm going to do, is go through the book. And I'm going to go back to page 52 where I left off last time and go through the first 164 pages, but not line by line, don't worry. But look at what they say about the spiritual experience, the spiritual awakening. How does it present itself? How is it manifested? Why do we need it? What do we have to do to get it? And it says, shows that the personality change sufficient to recover, to bring about recovery from alcoholism. So that's what they're talking about. The spiritual awakening or spiritual experience is a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. And it must happen to recover. That's what I wrote in my notes here. Has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true, and so what they were trying to get at is that the spiritual experience, the spiritual awakening, can manifest itself in different forms, but I really believe that the result is the same. The personality change is a God-centered life. And it says, yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experience must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. So they thought they had to have an experience like Bill W. in the hospital in Towns Hospital in 1934. And we did read about William James describes how they can occur suddenly or slowly. And Sandy Beach says that they can occur suddenly or slowly, but when they occur, they're always suddenly, because it says suddenly we realize that God is doing for ourselves for us what we could not do for ourselves. We suddenly realize that, and that still happens. It's going to happen the rest of your life. We're going to have progressive spiritual experience or spiritual awakening. The more we get to know God, and the more we follow His will, and the more obedient we become, we will suddenly realize many times that He's doing for me what I could do for myself. And to me, it's manifest mainly when I see that I'm wrong. I'm willing to admit that I'm wrong, and I'm willing to change my mind. And for an alcoholic, that's a big deal. When you live a life run on self-will, you don't want to change your mind. You're always right. And you never want to admit you're wrong. And so you're in conflict with everybody and everything. It says in the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it's not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. And they use the word sudden revolutionary change. The word changed is used in the first paragraph, personality change, a sudden revolutionary change, an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness followed once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. It's a change in my personality, and I think if you look on the site, second step proposition exercise, you'll see that Dr. Thibault, who was a prominent physician, psychiatrist, neurologist. He started going to AA because he wanted to observe what was happening. And he said that when an alcoholic is no longer omnipotent, that's a major personality change. When we go from omnipotence to seeking God, then we're no longer alcoholic. When we start to move away from ourselves and turn the direction of our lives towards someone besides ourselves, he says, then we're no longer truly alcoholic anymore, because we're willing to see something differently, seek something differently, get outside of ourselves, see that we're the problem. So you might read that. It's really an excellent analysis of our personality that needs to be changed. And so when Joe and Charlie read this, they talk about change. And they read it and they say change, and then the other one says change. And it says, among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformation. So it's going to be a transformation. It's a whole change in the direction of your life. You're getting off one horse going in the wrong direction. You're getting on another horse going in a different direction. The whole direction of your life's changed. And it says that these most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety. You could say the same thing about people who convert to Christianity. Some of them have a profound and sudden change, and in others it's a gradual conversion, a gradual change. But there's at some point when you realize you've changed, and that God is doing for you what you cannot do for yourself. And he calls them educational because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. And we were just finished the family afterwards, and they talk about how the change can be noticed by the family more often than you can see it yourself. And also, if they can't see the change, it's not worth having. The point of the change is to help relationships, the way we react, the way we interact with people. And if people can't see it, then maybe you haven't had the change that you think you've had. And just not drinking is not the change they're talking about. Because remember, when you stop drinking, you're just sober. Son of a bitch, everything's real. That's when the disease of alcoholism occurs, when you're sober, because you have a spiritual malady. And when you have a spiritual malady and you're separated from God, and you have the personality change in personality insufficient to recover because you're blocked from God, then you get irritable, restless, and discontent, and then you drink. And then you decide not to drink, and you still have the spiritual illness, the separation from God, and then you live a life run on self-will, and then you get fear and resentment and shame and guilt, and you drink. And so you're going to break that pattern by not going to God instead of alcohol. And you're going to see that alcohol doesn't work, it's never going to work, and that you need a different solution to your spiritual problem, and it has to be God. And it says, he finally realizes, but when you realize it, it's got to be suddenly, because that's when you realize it, that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life. And can you see when we were in church, Stu and I, yesterday, and we were walking out, and everybody was going to greet the minister, and, you have to wait in line, and, it was getting at 12 o'clock, and, I was hungry, I'd worked out. And the line was going very slow, and I was noticing, and I said, somebody must be talking to him a lot, and they're just blabbing away. And then I realized I was getting impatient, and I looked at Stu. I said, I'm getting impatient, Stu, and I said, but Stu, I don't have any place to go. I'm retired. And so I just laughed, and we waited. And it seems longer than it is when you're impatient and you're separated from God than it really is. I don't know if that makes any sense. And it's just a silly example. I like to use my silliness as examples of how this disease is always there. Your character defects are always there. But you learn to laugh at them, and you see them, and you recognize them. So instead of getting mad at the minister for talking too long or whoever it was, that I decided that they had talked too long. I just said, you know, I have no place to go. So which way works better for me? To be disturbed or to be with God and just wait in line? And I noticed not everybody else didn't seem to be bothered by it. Maybe that's what we call normal people. So, you know, I had 10 seconds of disturbance, but I could recognize it right away, and I laughed at myself. And it says, what often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. Well, I couldn't do it through self-discipline because I could have moral and philosophical convictions alone, galore, but I couldn't follow through on them. And I can't discipline myself with my alcoholic mind. A sick mind can't treat a sick mind. And with few exceptions, they find that they have tapped an unsuspecting inner resource. God is an unsuspected inner resource. So we're going to look at we agnostics in a few minutes and where God is and how we see the reality of him in our lives, and which they presently identify with their own conceptions of a power greater than themselves. So we tap into an unsuspected inner resource. And it says on, I'll look it up so I don't misquote it, but when we're doing step five and we finish our step five, it says we go home and we sit for an hour. And it says, one of the results of taking this step is the beginning of what I call a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening. The first one is on page 75, is we can look the world in the eye because I'm not blocked anymore and I can see the truth about my resentments and my fears. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease because I'm not filled with shame and guilt and remorse. And I'm not living in fear and resentment. I've learned how to deal with them, at least up to that point in some way. I've learned the spiritual principles. Our fears fall from me. They just fall away. So how can you look the world in the eye? What happens? You see, it's a sudden thing. Suddenly you can look the world in the eye. You can be alone in perfect peace and ease. Well, where were you before you were alone in perfect peace? It's a sudden thing. And you'll realize, those listening, you're obviously listening, do you notice during the day that you're at perfect peace and ease? And it just happens. It's the result of the relationship with the Creator. And it says we begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We see that we're in a position of neutrality. Alcohol is not dominating my life anymore. We feel that we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Aren't those great? Those are the fifth step promises, not read that I know of at any meeting. But really, they're the promises of the beginning of what a beginning of a spiritual experience looks like. And so get back to page 568. It says, most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of the spiritual experience. I mean, that's what it's all about. And our more religious members call it God consciousness. I mean, what else can you call it? You become conscious of God. And remember what Chuck Chamberlain said in that famous talk, A New Pair of Glasses. 1977. They record him over a weekend. You can get the book on XA Speakers. It's full of powerful spiritual observations. He says alcoholics only have one problem, conscious separation from God, and only one solution, conscious contact. Conscious contact, God consciousness. And what does he mean by that? When I'm separated from God, I'm back in Michael's world. I'm living a life run on self-will. And when I do that, things don't go well. I don't like the way things are happening. People are treating me, blah, 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 blah. And I get disturbed and I drink. And the solution is conscious contact, contact with God, staying in his light, walking with him, seeking him whenever I feel myself getting disturbed. And it says, most emphatically, we wish to say that, one, any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover. So any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of their experience can recover. So you want to be able to face your problems in the light of their experience. And remember, it says there are those who cannot or will not give themselves to the simple program. Those men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And what can't they see? They can't honestly face the situation that either they're going to go into the bitter end and die, or they need to have spiritual help. They can't see the truth of their situation. They can't honestly face their problem. And so I believe now that that is almost the grace of God for us to be able to see the truth about ourselves, to see our brokenness, so that we're willing to seek with the desperation of a drowning man the flimsy reed that becomes the powerful hand of God, it says on page 28. And it says, any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems, the light of our experience, can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. So why do people die? They close their mind. I don't want to hear about God. You talk about God too much. Blah, blah, blah. I hear it all the time. Well, you've blocked your mind. Remember I said change your mind. That's a spiritual awakening. Maybe you need to change your mind. Maybe your plan isn't working. Maybe what you think is right is wrong. How is it working for you? He can only be defeated. So the only we need to honestly face our problems. But I can't close my mind to all spiritual concepts. And I can be only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. And so when we get a change in attitude, we have an attitude of tolerance and acceptance and willingness and belief. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Remember, it says God does not make too hard terms to those who seek him, and I absolutely know that's true. Because when I was completely defeated, I got down on my knees and I said, God, please help me. And that was a long time ago. And I'm here today talking to you, and who would have thought? So what's required? Willingness. You have to be willing to change. You have to be honest about your situation, your thinking, your motives, your thoughts, and open-mindedness to accept advice, direction, and counsel for someone besides yourself. And that's the essentials of recovery. But these are indispensable. So they're not only essential, but they're indispensable. And why don't people change? They're not willing. They're not honest with themselves and other people. And they're not open-minded. And then they quote Herbert Spencer. It says, there is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. So I made some notes in here. It says, one is I really for this, what's required to recover is to let go of all my old ideas. I have to let go to all my old ideas of spiritual concepts. I have to let go of everything that I thought was true because it may not be. And I have to get rid of my attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. And I think that's really powerful, that appendix on the spiritual experience. And then I thought I'd go back and go through some of the information in the book, kind of a review. And so it'll probably be several talks of what's in the first 164 pages that would illuminate the what they're talking about, the spiritual experience or spiritual awakening, or how we achieve it, how it becomes part of us. And on page 52, they talk about we need to liberate our thinking. And they talk about how in those days when this was written, they said that they're going to have a rocket and go to the moon. And someone says, I bet they do it. And it says, the age in which they live is characterized by the ease with which we discard old ideas for new. And what they're saying here is, maybe I should be willing to discard all my old ideas for new. And here they're talking about the idea that God can restore me to sanity, God can direct my life better than I can, God is God, I'm not. And so they give you this, they ask you this question we had to ask ourselves, why I shouldn't apply to my human problems, the human problems that I have when I come in, and my human problems that I have today, to change my point of view. And is it a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, really changing my point of view? Because when I have my self-centered point of view, I don't like what I'm seeing, and it bothers me, or I'm irritated, or I'm in self-pity, or I'm resentful, or I'm fearful, or I'm impatient or intolerant. You get the picture. And I have to say, step 6 and 7 is really about changing your point of view. You're seeing something self-centered, your character defects are triggered, and change my point of view and see it God-centered, and then I'll practice the character of God. I can't be loving, patient, kind, tolerant, considerate, compassionate when I'm blocked from God. When I'm blocked from God, I'm going to have all my character defects. So I have to recognize and change my point of view whenever my character defects come into play and say, I'm seeing it wrong. God, help me see it differently. God, direct my thinking. God, remove the character defects. Give me your character. And it becomes almost automatic after a while, so you just do it. Why? Because it works and you feel better. So it says, maybe we should apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. And here there are some of the problems that people have from their self-centered living, their life, what it is to have an unmanageable life, how it looks at, like. Not just getting drunk all the time, but the things that's happening that cause you to have the emotions that want you to drink. It says we're having trouble with personal relationships. Remember, you're in conflict with everybody and everything. Look back when you came in here. Your life had been characterized by conflict, at least mine was. They were always wrong, they weren't treating me right, they weren't doing what I wanted, blah, 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 blah. I couldn't control my emotional nature. Well, absolutely. I was up or down depending on if I liked the way things were going, and that was usually dependent on whether things were going my way or the way I perceived it needed to be. And my emotional nature was not controlled. And I was full of fear, and I had a lot of resentment. And I was prey to misery and depression. and I couldn't make a living. I could still work, but that was going to come to an end too. At some point, we had a feeling of uselessness, full of fear. I was full of fear. I was unhappy. And when alcoholics are full of fear and unhappy, what do they want to do? Drink. Or if they're addicts, use. We want to escape that. And I couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. I couldn't even be help to myself. And was not a basic solution, these bedevilments, more important? And that was the solution. They call it the bedevilments, what you're bedeviled by if you have an unmanageable life. You have this, this is how your life looks. And maybe I should change my point of view, and then my life won't be bedeviled, and it won't be unmanageable. My point of view that I need to change is that I'm the center of the world, and I'm not. And they're going to get to step three, where I had to stop playing God, because it doesn't work. And a life run on self-will will never work. And so my point of view to change is I have to see that I can never live a life run on self-will. It's never going to work. And so here they tell us that the next paragraph, when we see others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe. Now you could say when you go to an AA meeting and you hear someone talk and they tell you what it was like and what happened and what it's like now, and how their reliance on God, and they've had a new relationship with God, and he's their director, and they're seeking to do his will and carry a vision of his will in all the activities. When you see that, if you have to stop doubting the power of God. And you can't doubt the power of God if you've been to an AA meeting where people are really sharing their spiritual experience. Now you can go to a meeting where people are sharing the disease. They're sharing with all the things that are going wrong in their lives, and that's understandable because they don't know any differently and they haven't worked the steps yet. But if you're in a meeting where someone is sharing their spiritual experience and you can see the change in them and they tell you how that occurred, then you have to stop doubting the power of God. The other thing about going to an AA meeting, if you're going to an AA meeting and there's a lot of sobriety room, in other words, people have stayed sober for a while, and you're new and you look around and you say, wow, how'd they do that? And for alcoholics to stay sober for any period of time has to be a miracle. We can't do it. We have no power to do it. And it's like Bill said about Ebby, had the power originated in him? Couldn't have been, because Ebby didn't have any power. So we're an example of how if you rely upon God, you can have a personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism, because we've done it. It says, our ideas, my own ideas did not work. My old ideas, but the God idea did. And that's really pretty powerful. Then on the next page, they say, when I became an alcoholic crushed by a self-imposed crisis, I could not postpone or evade, page 53. So when did I become an alcoholic? Or when was I aware of my powerlessness? And it's when we became alcoholics. It's a simple past tense of become. And they say they became it when they were crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade. So they were constitutionally capable of being honest about their situation. They had the self-imposed crisis they couldn't postpone or evade. They had to fearlessly face the question, either God is everything or else he is nothing. And that's really when you're at the turning point. Is God everything or is he nothing? And we're going to read on page 59 that we stood at the turning point. And which way are we going to turn? Half measures availed us nothing. We asked his protection, care with complete abandon. So are you going to do that? God either is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? Are you going to give yourself to God with complete abandon? And you have to do it all the time. Because of our the way we are created, we go back in the self automatically all the time. And so what is your choice to be? What is your choice to be today, right now? If you're disturbed, are you understanding that you're choosing yourself and not God? It's that simple. The program is very simple. Am I choosing God or me? And if I'm choosing God, I'm going to be okay in the moment. If I'm choosing me, something's going to come up, I won't like it. See, when I decided that the line was too slow, I was running my life, not God. God didn't say to me, Michael, the line's too slow, you need to get upset. Of course not. You see how silly we are? But it's life or death. And then it says, arrived at this point where this question is, we're confronted by the question of faith. And so what we're seeking in the spiritual experience, the spiritual awakening, is true faith, true knowledge of God, relationship with God that works, a design for living, a personality change, God-centered, relying on God. It says we have to live on a different basis, page 68, trusting and relying upon God. It's the same theme over and over again. Somebody said the big book says a few things, but it says it 1,000 times. And it says, you want to walk from the bridge of reason, which is your own mind, to the desired shore of faith, which is trust in God. And it says some people just can't seem to quite step ashore. They can't give up on themselves. And that's why people die in the hyphen. They can't give up on themselves. And so they die. And then I just want to finish a little bit of the information in We Agnostics. And it says, we have seen another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world. People arose above their problems. They said God made these things possible. Remember it says, lack of power, that's our dilemma. We have to have a power greater than ourselves. And it says God makes it possible. How do we get rid of selfishness and self-centeredness? God makes it possible. I don't make it possible, God makes it possible. And I don't assist him. I just stop running the world and he will run it. He will allow him to run it, stop running it, letting go, and then he will solve all my problems. It says we were fooling ourselves when we doubted this. And why? Because deep down, every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. It's this consciousness, this God consciousness, this deep down inside all of us. In C.S. Lewis' famous work, Mere Christianity, he describes in the first 30 or 40 pages how mankind has always had this sense, this moral compass. There's something inherent in all civilizations, in all societies, where people were aware of a certain kind of behavior that was good and a certain kind of behavior that wasn't. And we have that inside of us, the fundamental, that's what he calls the fundamental idea of God. And it says we can obscure it by calamity, by pomp, which is ostentatious display, worship of other things, but in some form or other it is there. And remember, I obscured this fundamental idea of God. I block God. And they're getting us ready, and we agnostics, to end this so that we will become God seekers and that we will want to unblock ourselves from God in step four after we make a decision in step three that we're not going to play God anymore. And it says, for faith and power greater than ourselves, and miraculous demonstrations of the power in human lives, the spiritual experience of spiritual awakening, are facts as old as man himself. And then here's the key paragraph, two paragraphs in the big book. It said, we finally saw, this is what they finally saw, that faith, trust in some kind of God is part of our makeup. Now, how do you see this trust that God's part of your makeup? And if they say it's just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. And it says sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. And how, when do you search fearlessly? Step four. So step four is when you begin the searching fearless moral inventory of yourselves. And he's there. We find he's there. We learn the prayers for resentment, freedom from anger. We learn how to change our fears. We learn how to have a sane sex ideal so we don't harm people in relationships. And it's capital he was there. So that, and he was as much a fact as we were. So this is what the spiritual experience is really looks like. Faith in some kind of God is part of me. Just like the feeling I have for a friend. Sometimes I had to search fearlessly, but he's there. He is as much a fact as I am. If you're listening, you're awake, you're alive. You believe you are a fact. Well, that fact is just as much a fact as God is there. He's deep down inside of you. He's part of your makeup. And it says, they found the great reality, capital G, capital R, deep down within us. That's what they call God, the great reality. The reality, the real world. I talk about the world of Michael and the world of God, the world of the Spirit. The world of the Spirit is the great reality. That's where God's the center of the world and where I get power from God. And it's deep down within us. And it says, in the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. When we face and be rid of everything that's not what, how God created in me, when I can see the truth about the person God created, not the one that Michael created, then I find God. Isn't that something? It is so with us. And then they say, we can only clear the ground a bit. And this is their testimony. If our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, because remember, that's what's going to block us from having the spiritual experience or awakening. We're prejudging something. We're not open-minded. Enables you to think honestly. So if I can sweep away my prejudgment, if it enables me to think honestly and encourages me to search diligently within yourself, which is what we do, in step four, then if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. And then what happens? You cannot fail. So what's the result? Here's what they tell you. The consciousness of my belief is sure to come to you. Faith, consciousness of my belief, spiritual experience, spiritual awakening. That's what it's all about. And that's so beautifully written. And I'll just finish up. There's a few more powerful points in the last two pages. And they talk about this man confined in a hospital who was approached by another alcoholic. And as the guy was talking to him, he said, if there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me. Well, had I let him? But later, alone in his room, he asked himself this question, is it possible that all the religious people I've known are wrong? Could it possibly be? See, he's willing to change his mind. He's willing to be open-minded. He's beginning to have a personality change. I could be wrong. While pondering the answer, he felt as though he had lived in hell. Then, like a thunderbolt, a great thought came. It crowded out all else. Who are you to say there is no God? Who am I to say that there's no God? He's becoming open-minded. And he tumbled out of bed, and he was overwhelmed by the conviction of the presence of God. And this is why they put that spiritual experience or spiritual awakening appendix, because people thought this is what you had to have. But it poured over and through him with the certainty and majesty of a great tide. the barriers he had built through the years were swept away. Well, I felt that way as I, when I'm working steps 10 and 11 all the time. I feel the barriers sweep away whenever I'm disturbed, when I did my fourth and fifth step. And as I work with people, I'm continually doing fourth and fifth steps. On myself, as I'm doing it with them, I can see the barriers that I had built. When I look back on my life and I have regret some of the things I did, I could see that it was because I had built barriers against God and was living a life run on self-will. And then it says, he stood in the presence of infinite power and love. And here they're bringing back what they talked about before in this chapter that I've covered today. They had stepped from bridge to shore, the bridge of reason to the shore of faith. And that's what happens when you enter the world of the Spirit in step 10. You've moved from the bridge of reason into the shore of faith, and you're in the world of the Spirit, or if you're a Christian, the world of the Holy Spirit. Now, the world of the Spirit always existed. Where was I before I entered it? Well, I was in Michael's world. And I have to be willing to leave Michael's world, steps 1, 2, and 3. And then from steps 4 through 9, I'm able to unblock enough so that I'm in the light of God's world and the world of the Spirit. And then it says, for the first time, he lived in conscious companionship with his Creator. And I want to tell you, nothing's better than just being okay. Nothing's better than asking God to remove your fears and it's done. Nothing's better than when you're feeling a resentment or you're having some impatience or intolerance, you ask God to remove it, it goes away. Nothing can feel better than that peace. It's a peace beyond all understanding. And and it says God had restored his sanity, and it says, is this but a miracle of healing? That's why I said, if you go to a meeting, hear people talk, you're new, you're going to be convinced that there's something going on here that cannot be explained. Anybody doubts the power of God or that whether God exists should just go to an AA meeting, a real AA meeting where people are sharing about their spiritual transformation. And what is the miracle of healing? They're going to tell you its elements are simple. One, circumstances made me willing to believe. My first step, my circumstances, I realized I was powerless, my life was unmanageable, and it made me willing to believe. Pain, living in total fear, living in, I can't, we talked about it Saturday when we were reading Bill's story. When we go back and we think back to what it was like at the end, it was really bad. I don't want to forget how bad it was. And one of the guys was saying it was starting to make him anxious, and that's 9 years, because he could remember just how bad it was. And then what did we do? We humbly offered, it says circumstances made him willing to believe. He humbly offered himself to his maker. We have to humbly offer ourselves because we know we're broken, and I need God. The beginning of the spiritual experience, the spiritual way, is to understand I need God. I'm hopeless without God. If I don't have that, I'm not going to have a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, and I'm blocked, and I won't be constitutionally incapable of being honest. I'm not constitutionally capable of being honest with myself that I need God, and I will not and cannot do the program. God has restored us all to right minds. And God is God, and I'm his children, and I serve him. That's what I wrote. And then I said, I'm no longer an agnostic. And it says, to this man that they describe in the hospital, the revelation was sudden. Some of us grow into more slowly, but he has come to all who have honestly sought him. And we say that at the end of how it works, God can and will if he sought. But you have to honestly seek him. And here's one of the greatest promises in the big book. When I drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. A lot of people say, well, you know, I don't know about God. And this, I said, don't worry about it. Just seek him. Call him God. Call this power greater than yourself. Seek him, and he'll reveal himself to you. And that's the spiritual experience, spiritual waking. God has revealed himself to me. And so I'm going to pick this up. I'm going to go through some more of the book and talk about how it all relates to the spiritual experience, spiritual awakening. So thank you very much. I hope this was helpful. Have a blessed day.